Hey guys, Eric here. Today on the D2C podcast, we're having a really cool conversation with Gene Bake, the Chief Merchandising Officer and co-founder of Miss A Cosmetics, which is one of the US's fastest growing cosmetic brands. They occupy a really interesting position of being a bargain or high value brand where most of their products cost a dollar or less, even amidst inflation. And today's talk is all about their amazing 1-2 punch of expanding retail locations that have an extremely high conversion rate for shoppers and following that up with a really effective SMS program that they have executed using Postscript. Hope you enjoyed the podcast and on with the show.
There's two things that really keep customers coming back to Miss A. One is we do a lot of new launches. Tuesdays and Thursdays is like a major beauty product. And then throughout the week, there's new accessories and jewelry and just like other beauty tools that launch in stores and online. If you come back to a Miss A store, whether it's online or in a store, if you come back a month later, there's going to be so much new product there that you didn't see last time. The second piece is we have key products where our customers have been just shopping with us for years and they're always coming back to restock on those products. So those are the two main factors that we focus on for lifetime value. We're not one of those high-end brands where it's like, okay, we're just trying to sell them one really expensive purse and be done with it. You know, it's like a constant relationship with that customer.
Gene, welcome to the D2C podcast. Can you start by telling me why you built Miss A?
Yes, thank you. I'm so excited to be here today. So for those that don't know, Miss A is a beauty and lifestyle brand. We're based out here in Dallas, Texas, and our prices are very, very affordable. Like a majority of the products are $1 to $188 US dollars. So we're on the very, very affordable side. And we have everything from makeup, skincare, beauty tools, and then even some kind of lifestyle accessory products like jewelry and hair accessories and things like that. But I founded the company with my husband in 2013. And when we were, you know, thinking about what kind of business, I definitely knew I wanted to do beauty. I studied actually fashion, but after working in fashion for a few years, I realized this isn't what I want. And I loved beauty because I was always on YouTube and, you know, just I'm Korean American. And so, you know, K-beauty was always just kind of, you know, in my life and everything. And so we knew we wanted to do something in beauty. And my husband and I really wanted to fill that market of that affordable piece. You know, it's like kind of like, so people brand us like the Dollar Tree or like the dollar store for beauty, but we didn't want it to be like cheap stuff. And so we really focused on that. And so we actually launched as an e-commerce brand first in 2013 on shopmissa.com. And I have no e-commerce background. My husband and I don't have any e-commerce background. So we just kind of started it. And, you know, what I did back then was I was just cold emailing, you know, YouTubers, because that's back then it was just YouTube. That was the platform. There was like, I think Instagram maybe barely had started. There was no TikTok, obviously, or Snapchat. So, you know, I started with like beauty influencers that I was following or girls that I thought would like our product. And I was like, hey, can I send you some Miss A product? And if you like it, you know, you can do a video or whatever you want. You know, if you don't, that's fine. And surprisingly, a lot of them said yes. And so that's how we kind of got our business going. And, you know, we're here 10 years later now.
So early days fueled by YouTube. So cool. Talk about how far that growth took you and then what your next phase of, because you guys have gotten quite massive over these last 10 years. Talk about how far that took you and then what fueled the next stage of your growth after those early YouTube days in 2013?
Yeah. So when we were starting the business, my husband had some experience in brick and mortar retail before we started Miss A. And so originally we wanted to open an actual store in the mall. But we realized, you know, it was a new brand and, you know, some of the malls were like, oh, I don't know how I feel about a dollar, you know, beauty store. Cause it was like a completely new concept. There was nothing like that. So they were just like, there was a lot of just going back and forth at that time, which is why we ended up starting off as e-commerce. But because of, you know, YouTube, we grew so fast the first year, we started, you know, we bootstrapped the company with, I think, $50,000 in savings to get an office space and then, you know, inventory. And we grew really quickly. It was like some 100% year over year. And so we were actually awarded Inc. 5000's, you know, fastest growing companies after year three. And so after like the first few months, we were like, you know what, forget brick and mortar. Like, we're just going to go all in on e-commerce. This is keeping us super busy. And so we really focused on that for the first 3 years. And then we were like, okay, you know what, I think now it makes sense to have a real brick and mortar store. And so we opened our first store here in Dallas in 2016. And then currently we have 30 locations, mostly in Texas, and then a few of the Southwest states that are in Texas. And we're opening probably another 15 by the end of this year. So we've, you know, since the last few years, we've been really concentrating on that brick and mortar, because for us as a brand, because we're so affordable, some people, you know, they'll come on the website and they're like, oh, this is too good to be true. Like, I want to see it in real life before I buy it. And I think that's where the store plays a really big role, because they come into the store, it doesn't look like a dollar store. It's really pretty. We're in, you know, just like the best malls in the town. And they come and they look at all the products in real life, and they're like blown away by the quality. And then from there, you know, they make purchases. If they're visiting from out of town, they'll go home and, you know, visit us on shopmissa.com. So the brick and mortar has really played a lot of critical roles in combining with e-commerce as well.
How do you go about selecting where you're going to put these? Like, how much thought goes into where your retail locations are specifically?
Yeah, a lot of thought goes into it. Like I mentioned, we're based in Dallas. So we opened our first seven stores within the DFW Metroplex. And so from here, you know, especially even after COVID and before COVID too, there are people in retail are like, you know, malls are dying or people aren't shopping in malls anymore. But especially here in Texas and, you know, this part of the U.S., the malls are still doing great. I think after COVID, you know, there's like the kind of like the D and F graded malls have kind of gone away, and everything's more condensed into like the good malls of the town. Like, if there was, let's say, 12 malls before, now there's only 7 or 8, but then those are the good ones. And so my husband works more in that part of the business, but there's a lot of research that goes into it. You know, just making sure that our, you know, demographic is there. As of right now, we kind of avoid the really, really high end malls with, like, you know, the luxury brands, because that also kind of isn't our market. Our general audience right now is Gen Z and, you know, young millennials. And so for that, it's like, we're just making sure that that demographic goes into there. And also when we look for locations within the mall, like, because of our price point, we're one of the biggest converting stores in the mall, because it's like, you go in and I think our conversion in store is like over 90%. 90% of people will come into the store and buy at least one thing, because there's so much to choose from and then the price points like that. And so we make sure we go into an area where there's a lot of footfall. And even if somebody's never heard of Miss A before, they're passing by our store and it's like intriguing. So they'll come in and then they see the prices and they're like, you know, oh my God. And that's when they become a customer. And so there's a lot of that research that goes in before, you know, finalizing a location.
So you're one of the few brands that comes on this podcast who doesn't have a huge paid ad budget when it comes to, or it's not a huge factor in how you scale. It really is at this point. Most of your scale is coming from your retail locations, and then you're building off of that with your retention programs on the back end. Is that about right?
Yeah. So like I said, we started with YouTube, and then, you know, a lot of luck was where when, you know, we started the business in 2013, because I think if I was trying to start the same business now, it'd be a lot more harder. But, you know, the different social media platforms that have evolved over the past 10 years have really helped us, you know, gain that following. And then because from YouTube, it went to Instagram, and then now on TikTok. And we have, you know, hundreds of millions of hashtags and tags on across these social platforms that are, you know, Shop Miss A Hall and things like that. So I had not spent a single dime on digital marketing, like outside of just influencer partnerships, until I want to say 2021, after COVID. And during 2021, you know, we were growing and we were like, you know what, we've never done it before. Like, let's try it and see how it is, you know? And so we did that for a little bit, but not too much. And so now, you know, we're back to doing more just organic influencer collaborations, and the retail also does help a lot, because it's like, if we open a store in a new town where we haven't been there before, we'll definitely see an increase of traffic coming from that area.
One of the things I wanted to ask about was, over the last few years, we've all experienced a fair amount of inflation. And I've even heard that, like, there are like dollar stores that are, you know, it's harder to find items that are an actual dollar. So how has a brand that has focused so much on like value that you get at these low price points, how have you dealt with the inflation that the economy is experiencing?
Yeah, it has impacted us like, you know, every other brand. And for us, because of our business model, you've heard of, you know, inflation and shrinkflation. So some brands go the route where they'll take stuff down, or some brands, they just, you know, increase their retail price. And so for a few of our products, we've had to maybe do some price adjustments, but, you know, all within a few cents, because it's like, I don't want to change my whole brand identity because of the issue that we're going into. So there have been a lot of difficulties regarding that, especially around COVID when, you know, freight costs were going out of control and just everything was rising. And so there's been different ways that we've been having to manage. But another thing that has helped us is that we've also grown a lot throughout this period. And so like our buying power and our buying quantities have also increased, which that's also helping us you know, cut back with the inflation. So, you know, if a manufacturer is trying to increase their price by X% because, you know, their cost has gone up, but we're like, hey, you know what, I'll give you an order for double the amount. And then, you know, let's try to keep the same price. So that's also been, you know, because we've been opening so many locations and stuff in the recent years. So I think that's also been a big factor for us.
Another factor in your growth is product-led growth. Like, how many SKUs do you have at this point?
At any given time, we have about 10,000 SKUs live in our store and on our website, and it's constantly changing.
And then are you leading the product selection when it comes to making sure that you have you have a version of the it product, essentially?
Yeah, yeah. So when I started the business, obviously, you know, you've talked to so many brown founders and they wear a million different hats. And I did the same thing as well. I was customer service in the beginning. I was packing orders. And as we've grown, I focused my time onto product development. So currently for my title, I'm chief merchandising officer. So I work really closely with our product development sourcing team. And that's where, you know, all the good ideas come out from. You know, we're always in the market, seeing what's trending, seeing what people want, because at Miss A, we want to provide products and a place where, you know, people can come and just be able to purchase things that they've wanted to try, but maybe they just couldn't purchase it from other brands because maybe they're like, you know what, I don't think $30 is worth it to try something that I'm not sure about. Or, you know, I want to try X, Y, and Z that's all trending this season, but I can't buy all three or four products. And that's where we want them to come to Miss A, because we'll have a very similar, you know, they call it dupe of a product that is trending or, you know, that is going viral, and you get to try it. And, you know, a lot of times they're happy with that. And, you know, for me too, I'm in the industry, but a lot of girls too, like, they have so much makeup and skincare that a lot of times you can't even finish, you know, the product. And it's like, it's a waste, you know, to just have all of that and spend that much money. Whereas at Miss A, it's like our products are a little bit smaller size. They're super affordable. And then you can just come and just try everything.
What's your hero product at this time?
It's the Pawpaw Wonder Blender. So it's a makeup sponge and it is viral on TikTok. And that's we have a handful of products that we also sell on Amazon on our, you know, storefront. And that's the number one ranked makeup beauty sponge. And it's won the Allure Best of Beauty Award. I don't know if, you know, you're familiar, but it's kind of like the seal of approval in the beauty industry. And so we've two products have won that award over the years. And for that, it just shows that we're not just making cheap products. You know, it's like, to get that award, it's like the quality's there. There's a fan base there. It's really good things that people just purchase over and over. So that sponge is our hero product.
What would you say the reason is for that? Would you, like, why is it the form factor? It's a unique form factor. It's fun. What was it you think that propelled this product into the zeitgeist so much?
So for a makeup sponge, you use it to like blend in your foundation, and you know, people that use it usually use it every day, and it gets dirty and you're supposed to toss it out, you know, every few weeks, because it's like, you know, it's a sponge, right? It's getting bacteria even though you wash it. And in the market, there's a popular brand which retails for $20, and then there's other ones for one piece for one sponge, and then there's other ones that retail anywhere between, you know, $10 and $15 as well. But for ours, you get a six pack for under $10. But the quality of it is, you know, literally coming from the reviews that I have seen, is that it's better than any of the $20 sponges that they've tried. And so that's where customers are like, okay, it's a better product at a better price, so why not?
Nice.
And we have, yeah, makeup artists and, you know, that buy bags and bags of them because they have to use a new sponge for each of their clients. And like, makeup artists are super picky, you know, with the tools that they use, and for how to have their seal of approval, it's like, you know, perfect.
Very cool. And then when it comes to your customer LTV, like what, I guess once you get someone in the door with one of these, not too good to be true, but I guess that's the sense. You're trying to heap on the value, right? Where you're able to undercut your competitors on price and on quality kind of at the same time. And I imagine that's sort of like an addictive quality for a customer. How do you view your customers in terms of LTV, and how do you keep them coming back again and again?
Yeah. So the main factor, I think there's two things that really keep customers coming back to Miss A. One is we do a lot of new launches, like I mentioned. You know, every week we do two kind of launch days. Every Tuesdays and Thursdays is like a major beauty kind of launch product. And then throughout the week, there's new accessories and jewelry and just like other beauty tools that launch in stores and online. And so for us, if you come back to a Miss A store, either whether it's online or in a store, if you come back a month later, there's going to be so much new product there that you didn't see last time. And so that's one of our key factors that a lot of brands can't do, just because of logistics and just, you know, the way that their company is built, is that we just have a lot of newness that have people just coming back for more and more. And then the second piece is just like our hero product. Another hero product for us is false eyelashes and like sheet masks. And those you have to stock up on them, because most of the times you're wearing them every day or at least a few times a week. And so we have key products where our customers have been just shopping with us for years, and they're always coming back to restock on those products. So I think those are the two main factors that we, you know, focus on for lifetime value. Because it's like, we're not one of those high-end brands where it's like, okay, we're just trying to sell them one really expensive purse and be done with it. You know, it's like, it's a constant just relationship with that customer.
And then when it comes to actually technically bringing them back, maybe more on the e-commerce side, what's the most effective retention tool that you guys have implemented?
So the three main, you know, ways that we communicate with our customers is social media, like doing posts on social media, and then newsletter and SMS. So those are kind of the three main things. And, you know, for newsletter and SMS, obviously we have flow set up so that if, you know, just depending on where they are within the Miss A journey, they'll get, you know, specific messages. And then, of course, also messages and emails on, you know, sales or any new things that are going on. So those are kind of, yeah, the three main ways that we're retaining our customers.
Can you talk about who your customer is and why SMS is such an important channel to reach them?
Yes. So since we started in 2013, ever since we launched, we've always had an email, you know, campaign that we've always done email. And SMS, I think we implemented it 2 years ago, because, you know, until then, I think that's when right when around I started getting a lot of messages from brands that I was following. And I was like, okay, you know what? This is so much more effective than email, because email was just getting too full and too much. And sometimes it's just like so quick, you know, it's just so easy to just kind of delete them out. And so we launched our SMS program. One, because like I said, our audience, mainly Gen Z. So, you know, 18 to 25-ish, 30 even, is kind of our core audience. And they're always on their phone. And, you know, I feel like they are more into text messaging than email. And so for text messaging, that's where we've seen a lot of just, you know, a lot of metrics and just a lot of sales that come through that channel.
I'm curious, first of all, who are you using for SMS, and why did you select them versus others?
We're currently using PostScript. So we started with them when we first decided to implement SMS. And in the beginning, I did the personal shopping around and talking to the different brands because it was the first time we were going to launch on it. And PostScript, I went with them because one is the account manager and the team that I would be working with. They first had a lot of beauty background. They were working with a lot of other beauty brands, and I thought that was important. And they were also very hands-on in getting our account set up and just like kind of holding our hand through the process. Even to this day, I have a great account manager, you know, today that works with me. But because we were so new, that was important because it's like I knew they cared. So they helped me set up, you know, all the campaigns, all the flows, went over metrics with me, gave me, you know, tips on what we should improve on and things like that. So I think that was just a really big factor for us.
So SMS is obviously going to be a big factor on all your e-commerce sales. Are you also collecting like phone numbers at point of sale at your retail locations?
We are, yeah, because we have so much traffic to them. And obviously we want to interlink our retail customers to our e-commerce ones. So we have like signs with QR codes throughout our store, and they get a 10% off their order that day if they do sign up and show the cashier that they signed up. And so we do get a lot of signups in store, and then we keep them in separate lists per location so that if there's, you know, a special or a sale that we're doing in one store, we can just send it to those customers that have signed up. So we do signups in store and then, of course, on our website.
I can see it being such an important part of your strategy just because it's such a high converting, high attention, intimate channel that people aren't really ignoring as much as they might ignore email or anything else like that. And you have such a high conversion rate in store. So that like the number of customers that you're able to reach via SMS who've actually bought stuff is probably pretty massive and probably a lot more than other brands.
Yes. Yes, for sure. And especially because we've been launching the program where they get also a discount when they sign up for the first time. So a lot of people do take advantage of that. And yeah, we have, you know, a ton of traffic that comes to the store. So it definitely helps with our SMS list.
And then within SMS, what are some of the actual technical sort of campaigns or tactics that you're using that other brands might be able to learn from?
We do, so we have flows set up to hit, you know, different milestones of the customer. If it's like, you know, their anniversary, then we'll send them a little gift and like a thank you message or birthday and things like that. But other ones that work really well for us are the back in stock. So our products sell out really quick online, and customers are like, oh my gosh, I need to have this. And so we've seen it perform way better than having an email back in stock. I think we do have both right now, but the SMS does perform faster because it's like the text message is instant and they see that it's back in stock and then they can go and make the purchase. So that is a really important feature for us. And then number two is we do kind of like a roundup of best sellers from that month because there's been a lot of new arrivals. And we've also noticed that that campaign does really well as well because maybe the customer was busy that month or they weren't really paying attention to the other messages that we were sending them, but they're getting basically like a recap of, you know, what's hot, what's doing really well for Miss A. And so we've seen that campaign do really well. And we try to send those out once a month at the end of the month.
You mentioned newsletter. We're a newsletter here at D2C, that being your other major retention channel. Do you do the newsletter instead of directed email messages? Do you send those on SMS and then just send a more general newsletter? Or how does email play into your retention strategy?
Yeah, so email, in the email, we go a little bit more detail into the actual product that's launching. So it's for those customers who really want to engage with us a little bit more, learn about the product a little bit more, and there's more images. And our newsletters are quite lengthy. Like it's not word heavy, but we do provide a lot of information on there. Whereas for the text message, even if it's for the same launch, then it'll be a more shortened version. Like it'll have just maybe one image and like a one word of like why you need it and, you know, just make it quick and easy. But we've also done it where we'll alternate, you know, different launches on email or text. Cause it's like a lot of times people are signed up on both and I don't want it to be repetitive. And because we have so many launches, so we're like, okay, maybe this launch we do it on email. And then for this one, we do it on SMS.
You mentioned your back in stock automation. I think that's a great call. Like what kind of, I think more brands, especially any brand that has this kind of turnover or this kind of product turnover should be doing something like that. What kind of metrics approximately are you seeing from that automation?
It's
like really high click-through rate, I bet.
Yes. Yes. The click-through rate, like, I don't know. I want to say over 50%, like way over 50%. Wild. 'Cause it's like, they signed up for it and, you know, it's something that they really want. And so I think we have it, you know, set at where it's like, if it restocks at least, I don't know, 100 or 200 pieces, then that's when it triggers it to go out. And yeah, it's wild, but it is our best performing piece.
You mentioned Postscript. Do you think there's anything that they're missing as part of their owned marketing stack that you'd like to see them build?
Not that I can think of. I still consider myself fairly new to the SMS part of it. And so even now, you know, we're strategizing with our account manager how to improve what they already have, you know, that we can use, you know, for our brand. So I feel like there's still, you know, room for improvement for us right now with what they have. So, but, you know, anytime they have a new feature or something, then, you know, they'll ask us, do you think it makes sense for us? Do you want to beta test it? All of that. And those have also been really helpful.
I just think, yeah, your emphasis on retail backed up by SMS is such a deadly like one-two punch strategy. Is that when you look at the future of Miss A, do you see like the growth that you want to achieve happening kind of through that combination, really expanding strategically your retail operation and backing it up with this great retention strategy?
Yeah, I definitely do. And there's actually, I forgot another one is that when we're opening a location, we can check subscribers that have subscribed to SMS from that zip code or like, you know, within like a 10-mile radius of that zip code. And then we'll send a message saying, hey, there's a Miss A coming near you. And we've seen that does really well too.
Very cool. Has your SMS strategy changed how has it evolved mainly since when you were first starting it versus now? Is there anything different?
I think in the beginning we were doing some introductions to the customers because we were just, you know, just getting into their text. And then I feel like right after that, we were just kind of pushing more product launches and, hey, here's a new arrival, things like that. And then I think starting towards the end of last year, our strategy has also been like, let's kind of get engagement more into the brand and not so much the product. Like, yes, the product is important, but we also have a lot of new followers that subscribers that have subscribed to us, you know, since we've launched. And so we're kind of focusing on community and just reintroducing the brand, reintroducing me, what Miss A, our mission is, you know, and things like that. And also doing more kind of like conversational messages with the customer. So we also did one, like, I think it was for Halloween maybe. And we were like, hey, text us your Halloween makeup look to be entered into a giveaway. So then they'll text us a picture back, you know, so it's more conversational, or we'll ask them, you know, how do you feel about this? And then they can, you know, provide a response. And so at first I was like, oh, I don't know if people are actually going to respond back to these, but they do and they love it. And so I think it's more engaging. So we're trying to do more engaging type of content.
Very cool. And are you also sending like transactional updates and things like that for shipping? And how are you leveraging those to drive even more sales?
Yes. I think right now we have a shipping notification with their tracking once it goes out. And then I think there's also one that says like that your order's delivered, because sometimes people don't realize that it's already like in their mailbox or something. And then after that, we have flows that are set up depending. So we have flows that are set up where on specific products, if we know they're going to run out within 30 days or 60 days, we give them a reminder saying, hey, are you running low on this? Do you need more? Or I think we have, you know, different retention programs set up like after 30 days and maybe 45 days if they haven't made another purchase since then. So we've also been, yeah, testing a lot of those kinds of flows since last year.
Now, as a company that doesn't spend that much on digital ads, I have to ask, if we were to give you a $100,000 grant that you could use for growth, how would you deploy that in Miss A over the next like quarters, would you say?
And it's just free. You're giving it to us.
Just
as a
free.
Grant.
Free 99.
Because we're growing, I would say the real answer would probably be to invest it in our product development, just because we're, you know, developing so much. But since it's free and I can kind of take risks with it, I think we would try more digital advertising or working with, you know, just like either bigger collaborations where we're kind of like, oh, that's too much right now. Like, I can't invest that much into that. And I think we would really play around with that digital, you know, advertising, because I kind of want to see.
And you mentioned, you know, you guys grew in those early days of YouTube and just hit that right at the right time. Mm-hmm. How has the influencer game evolved for you versus that time? I imagine it's not quite shooting fish in a barrel like it was in 2013, but how has your sort of influencer strategy evolved over time?
Yeah. Like I said, one of the lucky ones where back then they didn't have, you know, managers or agencies that represented them. They were emailing themselves. They had their own rates if they had any. And now, you know, it's a whole different world, right? It's a big industry. There's, you know, their rates have gone, you know, tremendously high since back then. When we first started, it was more like, okay, I'm going to email everybody that I can and kind of see, you know, who wants to, you know, try our products and do a video. And then slowly after that, I think the effect of it also kind of started wearing off, because it's like more and more people already knew about Miss A. And so, you know, most of the first videos were like, oh my God, I've never heard of Miss A before. This is amazing, you know, from this one influencer. But then, you know, a few years down, they've already heard of Miss A. If another influencer does it, you know, the ROI just wasn't as high as before. And also, you know, just the influencer rates have also gone up a lot. And so we've kind of done our strategy now where it's like, okay, we're not just working with everybody just one-offs, you know, in just kind of doing anybody that can do it. We're more selective with partnering influencers and doing more of a, like a strategy kind of package. So maybe over like 6 months, we'll do X amount of videos and we'll do maybe one get ready with me, one product promotion, you know, one haul video. So something that just kind of makes sense for both of us in terms of a long-term relationship, and someone that we know has that audience that wants to buy from Miss A, because that's also important too.
The best time to plant a tree was yesterday. The second best time is today.
Yeah.
And so if you were starting a beauty brand, or what advice do you have for people out there who might be listening to this podcast who are thinking of starting a beauty brand now? What advice would you give them about how to go about it?
So I would say, I mean, if they can get investment, obviously that's great. We're still self-funded. And so we got to really just be, you know, cautious of everything that we're spending our money on. But I would say if I was starting now, and I think I can't afford all these digital advertisements or, you know, influencer collaborations, like I've seen that a lot of people online really find brand founders interesting and just love following them and hearing their story. And so I would probably put myself out there a little bit more. I'm personally not that active on social media. Sometimes I'll come on the Miss A, you know, TikTok channel, and like, I get really good feedback on it and I'd love to do more. I just like, it's really time consuming, but I think I would put a lot of my focus on that, because just the brand founder coming out and actually talking about his or her own products, I think that really builds a really good relationship with the customers or potential customers. And it's like, there's so many brand founders now who are like influencers in a way, you know, and they're just, you know, talking about their own products. And I think that's a really good strategy that doesn't require money from you
and wasn't available to previous generations, you know, when they're starting a business. It also has the effect of putting you into the conversation potentially with other influencers as well, right? Rather than maybe cold emailing them, you're engaging them, you're stitching them with a get ready for me type video, right? That opportunity is there to build the relationships with those influencers by being an influencer yourself.
Yes, yes, yes. I think it's amazing. And there's so many, you know, great founders out there who have amazing social channels and they put out, you know, great content themselves. And I think that's a really just key factor in the time that we're living in today.
Very cool. Where's your next retail location going to be?
We have a lot in the works right now, but we are opening our first few stores in Arizona. We don't have any in Arizona yet. So that's coming up later this summer. So we're really excited for that.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on the D2C podcast today. I'll await, my daughter and I will await for your first store in Vancouver.
Yes.
I don't know if that's too cold of a climate. You seem to like the warmer climates better, but shoot me a line if you open in Canada.
We will. We are so excited to one day be in Canada.
Nice. Thanks so much, Jean.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. If you're not a subscriber to our newsletter, you can do that right now at directtoconsumer.co. I'm Eric Dick, and this has been the D2C Podcast. We'll see you next time.